Thanks, James, for the introduction. Good afternoon, everybody. Today I'm going to talk about the effect of progressive drought on the yield, carbohydrates, and amino acid composition of different alfalfa accessions. This is a project carried out at New Mexico State University, and it was funded by the National Research Initiative Comparative Grants Program. So a brief introduction about alfalfa. It's a major forage in the United States and Europe because of its high protein content. And in 2008, the hay alfalfa production earned about $11 billion in the United States. However, water deficit or drought is a major constraint in the western United States and many parts of the world. And some of the responses of drought include changes in morphology, physiology, altered protein synthesis and lipid metabolism, and also production of reactive oxygen species, which can disturb the cellular mechanism and eventually reduce the plant productivity. Luckily, plants have the defense mechanisms to cope up with these conditions. Some of the classical examples are the enzymatic ways, like superoxide dismutase, catalase, etc., to scavenge reactive species, and also non-enzymatic ways like antioxidants to protect against excess light energy and ROS. It also includes the osmotic adjustment, which helps to maintain turgor under lower leaf water potential. Common examples are the amino acids, sugars, and sugar alcohols. So since water is a major problem, it's very crucial to understand the genetic, physiological, and biochemical mechanisms used by the plants to cope up with these adverse environmental conditions. At New Mexico State University, the breeding program involves alfalfa plant breeding and also the development of high-density microarrays, DNA markers, and tetrapolar genetic map. And the physiology program focuses on the whole plant physiology and also the biochemicals that includes leaf pigments and antioxidants, carbohydrates, and amino acids. So our major objective was to test yield, whole plant physiology, carbohydrates, and amino acid composition of different alfalfa accessions that varies in water use efficiency. And the long-term goal is to link this physiological and biochemical mechanisms of drought tolerance with identified drought-responsive candidate genes. So for this study, alfalfa was planted in 2004. It basically consists of two nurseries, Chilean and Falquera, which I'm going to explain in the next slide. Each included about 100 first-generation Bacross accessions. It consists of four replications. So for this study, the breeding group used two extreme parents. One is Medicago Falquera, which is a high water use efficient but low yielder, and Chilean, which is a low water use efficient and high yielder. So these two are hybridized, and the F1 was backcrossed with each parents, and a separate nursery was created. And for this presentation, I'm going to focus on this Chilean nursery. And within this 100 accessions, I'm just going to focus on six of them. The first one is the control, which is Medicago Sativa Wilson. It's a common drought-tolerant cultivar, which is commonly grown in New Mexico. The next two are the parents, the Chilean, which is low water use efficient, and the other parent, Falquera, which is a high water use efficient. And then the hybrid of these two parents, and then E112 and E119 are the high and the low yielding first generation Bacross accessions. So basically, you got two parents, one hybrid, one extreme high and low yielder, and then a control. And this depicts the treatments that we imposed in 2006 and 2007 progressive drought study. Basically, the alfalfa grows from April through September in New Mexico. And at the beginning of the season, alfalfa plants were given 100% flood irrigation. And the physiological measurements and also the forage yield was taken about 25 days approximately. And then in the next couple of cycles, we gave only like 50% of full irrigation. And so the plants were made to stress. This also coincided with increasing temperature in that region. And so the physiological measurements are taken at full well water condition, which is baseline, and then water stress conditions, which is stress 1 and stress 2. And the forage yield was taken from April through September in 2 years. And so the parameters that we studied in 2006-07 included the plant water relations like relative water content and leaf water potential. And leaf gas exchange parameters were measured using the Lycor 6400. And leaf pigments and antioxidants were quantified using HPLC. And then the shoot bin was also taken. And in 2007, end of the 2007, the plants were dug and the root biomass was analyzed. And we also looked at the carbohydrates and amino acid composition. So basically what we found was in 2006 progressive drought study, this table shows the water relations. The left column shows different water treatments like baseline and then stress 1 and 2. And we found we studied the different parameters. And basically the pre-dawn leaf water potential did not differ from baseline to stress 1 and 2. However, the relative water content, which was measured in the pre-dawn and solar, seems to show a drop in water content, which was also visually we were able to see the water stress. So in physiology, we did not find any difference among alfalfa accessions, but overall, the photosynthesis dropped about 50% from well-watered baseline to stress conditions. And we also found an increase in the xanthophyll cycle activity, and we found increased accumulation of alpha tocopherol once the drought was imposed. And now I'm going to talk about the shoot and root biomass harvest. Basically, the shoot biomass is determined at the end of the baseline progressive drought studies, like stress 1 and 2, and until the end of the growing season in both years. And the root biomass was determined at the end of the study. It was harvested by a tractor mount undercutter, and we dug up to like 25 centimeters of soil surface. And this table here shows, this graph here shows the cumulative shoot biomass yield in 2006 and 7. And basically this is the, Wilson is the control, and the two parents, the high and the low yielder, the hybrid, the extreme high and the low yielders are shown here. And overall we found the control and the high-yielding parent and the high-yielding hybrid generally has a higher cumulative biomass yield than the low-yielding parent, the hybrid, and the low-yielder. Similar trend was followed, observed in 2007 also, although the overall yield dropped in 2007. And this picture shows the root biomass harvest. We dug like about 1,230 plots, like 25 centimeters soil depth. It's a pretty intensive work. And what we found was the root biomass also had interesting data. We found that the extreme the control, Wilson, the high-yielding parent, and the extreme high-yielding hybrid, they had a higher root biomass yield, while the low-yielding parent, the hybrid, and the low-yielding hybrid had a consistently lower yield. So we found a pattern. So in summary, shoot biomass, which is the forage yield, is the best commercial indicator that represents the integrated drought response of physiological, biochemical, and genetic process. Overall, water deficit reduced the shoot biomass about 65-80% depending upon alfalfa accessions. The control and the high-yielding parent and hybrid generally had higher shoot and root biomass, while the low-yielding parent, the hybrid, and the low-yielder hybrid generally had lower shoot and root biomass. So higher cumulative shoot biomass observed in alfalfa accessions with higher root biomass indicates that drought tolerance may be conferred to plants with extensive deep root system. And at the end of the 2007 study, once we dug the plants out, we basically separate the stems, the crown, which is the portion right below the soil, and then the roots. And with stem, crown, and roots, we analyzed the carbohydrates and amino acid composition. And we found very interesting facts from this analysis. And this graph here shows the concentration of monosaccharides like glucose and fructose in stem, crown, and roots. Basically, the stems are the green color, crowns are in yellow, and roots are in brown color. And predominantly, the shoot had higher monosaccharides like glucose and fructose in the stems. In contrast, the crown and roots had a higher concentration of disaccharide. Sucrose was found predominantly in the crown and the roots. And also maltose, another disaccharide, was found predominantly in crowns and little in roots. Interestingly, we found a higher concentration of raffinose that was found exclusively in the stems. And we found a statistically different concentration accumulation of raffinose. Interestingly, the the low-yielding pattern seems to accumulate a higher concentration of raffinose in the stem than others. So to summarize, no difference in carbohydrate content among alfalfa accessions, except for raffinose, which was found highly in the low-yielding parent. However, we found a distinct pattern of partitioning of carbohydrates between the plant pots. In general, monosaccharides were predominant in the stems, disaccharides were predominant in crown and roots. The trisaccharide was found exclusively in the stems. And now I'm going to show some of the graphs of proline, amino acids. The proline, which is the major amino acid found under stress condition, was predominantly found in stems and roots than crown. Proline concentration did not differ among alfalfa accessions, so it's an average value here. Similarly, we found other amino acids that are predominantly found in the stem and roots in declining order. And arginine, another amino acid, was found predominantly in the root samples than stem and crown. And again, this alfalcata seems to have higher concentration of arginine. And similar pattern was also found for other amino acids, alanine and tyrosine. So in summary, there is no difference among alfalfa accessions for carbohydrates, for the amino acids, except for histidine and arginine, which are found in higher concentration in the alfalcata roots, which is the low-yielding parent. However, we found a distinct pattern of amino acid partitioning, where proline was found predominantly in stems and roots, and it is usually like 2 to 4 times higher than other major amino acids. While serine, leucine, isoleucine, and valine was found predominantly in the stems, and arginine and tyrosine was found predominantly in the roots. In conclusion, we found a distinct pattern of carbohydrates and amino acids within alfalfa stem, roots, and crowns. Crown and roots are the major carbohydrate sinks because it provides a readily metabolizable energy for alfalfa regrowth. While monosaccharides and trisaccharides were predominantly found in the stem, maybe an indicator of osmoprotective role under drought conditions. And amino acids, in general, they help to maintain osmotic balance within the cell, and they prevent dehydration by stabilizing the membrane and protein structure. And our overall conclusion was, with the physiological parameters like photosynthesis and antioxidant response, was very concerned among alfalfa accessions under progressive drought. The carbohydrates and amino acids that were quantified at the end of the progressive drought also expressed very conserved drought response. Therefore, these traits may not be a useful indicator for drought tolerance. However, we found that higher root biomass that was observed in relation to higher shoot biomass may serve as a good indicator of drought tolerance. I'd like to thank all the people involved in Dr. Tracy Stelling's lab and Dr. Ian Ray's lab and Dr. Champa Gopalan's lab, who made this project very successful. This I'd like to thank and take any questions.
One quick question, or on schedule. Did you look at the rhizobium in the roots?
No.
That was like an interesting finding to see the same relationship with the you're not looking at the quality of the that was intuitive value, right? As they affect animal nutrition, what was your interest?
The whole idea is to, we chose two extreme parents and crossed them, and we created a lot of first generation back crosses to see what kind of drought tolerance mechanism we can see, and then we can correlate this physiological mechanisms with the breeding program that is already happening at this university to try to correlate any genes with the physiology. That's the whole idea.